at the end of the day, to put food on my table, I've got to work. I think it was Andy Stanley that said that never trade the job that anybody can do for the job that only you can do. And I'm the only mom my kids have. I'm the only wife that my husband has.
The Women in Tech podcast is an independent production funded by you, the community. To support Women in Tech, if you believe in the vision as much as we do, please consider going to womenintechpodcast.com. That's womenintechpodcast.com, and just click on the contribution link to keep this podcast going. Thank you. Welcome back to the Women in Tech podcast. I'm enjoying being in Wilmington, North Carolina so much. The tech scene here is absolutely a thriving place, and it's really, really interesting to watch it as it's starting out and where it's going to be 5 years from now. And part of that growth is a wonderful entrepreneur named Melissa. Hello, Melissa.
Hey, Esprit. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. So you're more on the side of like a fast growing company. You really focus on enterprise and like the big picture, and would you say you're past startup stage?
You know, it's one of those things. I talk to a lot of companies and they'll be 5-7 years in and still thinking like a startup.
Right.
I feel like we are there. We're about 2.5 to close to 3 years in. So I feel like we're still in startup, but we, you know, we have over 100 clients at this point. So I don't know. We're a mature startup. Yeah, I guess you can call us that.
Yeah. I mean, it's so funny. Even the definition of like starts, like some people are like, is Google still a startup? I'm like, no,
it's not.
They're not a startup. So let's do a formal introduction. Go ahead and tell the world who you are and your company.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for that. So my name is Melissa Philippi. I'm the president of Performance Culture, also the co-founder. My co-founder is Dallas Romanowski, and he and I work together as business advisory consultants, helping companies through all types of the life stage of what they were going through, from startup to exit, actually. Mm-hmm. And always there's something to do with people, right? Yeah. So people's your greatest asset, a lot of times your biggest liability as far as expenses go. And it's your biggest human capital management project that you have. So while we've been counseling, companies through all kinds of scenarios, the people question always came up. So we needed to find something that would really help them build better teams and get better results.
Right.
So we did so with just simply starting with what we call the performance values matrix, helping them focus on not only performance, but their behaviors, how mm-hmm. they demonstrated the company's core values. By doing so, Excel is not very scalable, as you can imagine. Then we spun it off as its own entity in January 2015.
What does core values mean to you guys?
For us, it's definitely, the essence of who you are. It's kind of what you want to be, the how you want people to behave. It's the culture of your company. It's the things you hold most dear, that when someone thinks about your organization, what comes to their mind? What picture is painted in their mind? You know, what customer experience do you want them to have? What does the employees believe in? You know, how do they demonstrate the heartbeat of your company? So all of those things, and everybody has a little bit of a different, slant on that and mm-hmm. what they, hold most dear. Mm-hmm. So that's why we allow companies to be customizable with what those core values are, but then to have a platform to train and to coach their employees to live that on a daily basis.
I love it. So bring me back. Let's start at the beginning of your journey and then work our way to present time. When did you realize you were first in love with technology?
That's why I think I was telling you in the beginning before we got started that when some friends said, hey, why don't you come on this podcast? Yeah. I was like, are you sure? Because I never thought of myself as somebody that would be in technology. Honestly, right. If you would have asked me this even 5 years ago, would you be in technology industry? Mm-hmm. I'd be like, are you crazy?
Right.
I'm a certified financial planner by background. I still have that designation. Right. I still have life and health licenses. So I worked in financial services for over a decade. But through my passion for, helping organizations fulfill their mission, I found myself in, if you're going to stay relevant and you're going to find a way to help them be great in a competitive right. marketplace, it has to involve technology.
Right.
And we need to take out the administrative burden of these kinds of processes so we can focus on what's real in
right,
front of
right,
us.
Right.
We can focus on the things that are going to get the results.
Right.
So, I'm a fan of anything that saves time. I'm a fan of anything that helps us focus on those higher level
right, right.
Uses. of our time. So technology is something that I've grown to love, and I'm learning so much about, really.
In the very little time that I've known you, I can tell that you're an incredibly respectful person and a very efficient person, and you like to pay attention to detail.
I do.
So I could see how you would have a passion for utilizing technology to help people do that at scale. It's just obvious to me. It's a natural relationship. Yeah. So, when did you discover, when did you start to pivot from just being a CPA, right?
CFP, Certified Financial Planner.
Okay. A CFP, into the world you're into today.
Well, that story really goes back to something that we all probably remember, which was the historic financial crisis of 2008, 2009. And that definitely changed a lot of the culture of, I think, Americans in general. Mm-hmm. I was working at a very large financial institution during this situation. We were going through, one of those major mergers and buyouts. We were accepting TARP money. When you accept TARP money, you have to really quickly cut expenses,
right?
So labor is one of those things that get slashed.
Right.
And, luckily I was in a particular role where, if you produced, you were fine. And if, you hit those numbers, you were fine. If you didn't, then you were cut. So I was okay because the production was okay. But on the bank side, because I was on the wealth management side, but on the bank side, I was watching these bankers' jobs be axed left and right because some people in the headquarters had to make some quick decisions. They looked at some scorecards for the last 6 months, who's met these tick marks, these widget marks, and who hasn't. If you made those widget marks, you got to stay. If you didn't, you were gone. And the thing is, in a market that's fallen by 50%, would you expect those same tick marks to be reached?
Right.
We've all heard these case studies now that have been out in the world, and that's a broken system. You can game that system to make it look like what you need it to look like, but not actually be following the core values of the company.
Right.
So what was celebrated and rewarded in that situation was, frankly, a gamification. That turned my stomach because I watched my good friends that really bled for the bank, blood, sweat, and tears, worked for the bank, always did the right thing for the client, always did the right thing for the bank. Their jobs were the ones that were cut because they weren't gamifying the system. And then the ones that did gamify the system got to stay.
Right.
That will change you. That will leave an impression, a mark on you. So I didn't know what was going to happen. I was pregnant with my first child. I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do, but it ain't this.
Right.
So I had my baby. I decided to not go back, stayed at home for a while, and started just advising some insurance agencies on the side to just kind of supplement some income. And I remember telling my husband, I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I just can't go back working for the man like that.
Right.
That is such a broken process. I can't handle it. So through the advisory is how I met my co-founder, Dallas Romanowski, and he was doing the same thing, believed the same thing I did, that core values and an adherence to behaviors had to be equally as important as performance. So, I guess that's kind of brings us back to the beginning where we got together and put our minds together and found a better way to really coach and develop and measure employees.
And now you didn't, at this time, know anything about technology yourself. Really,
other than the daily use. That's
right.
My husband thinks it's hilarious that I'm a president of a tech company. He's like, you are you really?
And so was it your partner that brought that technology or
when? Yes.
So tell me about that and how, because I'm also the non-technical co-founder. I think after some time you start to pick it up, right?
You do.
Yeah, it's kind of like learning Spanish. If you're dating someone that speaks Spanish, you're going to start speaking a little bit anyway. So,
Have you dated someone that spoke Spanish?
No, but I had all these CTO co-founders, right? And so people, I'll build websites now, but I'll never say that I'm a programmer or a developer.
Right.
And my friends say, but you are. I'm like, no. I just pretend to be one. I just learned little bits and pieces along the way. Like, you guys actually know what you're doing. I'm just like pretending over
here. Fist bump. I'm right there with you. Absolutely.
So I feel you because I'm that non-technical person too. So what, it's scary because it's a complete, it's especially you and I are probably, I would imagine most founders are A-types for the most part.
Oh, absolutely.
So we have to relinquish control. To someone else to build something that's essential and vital in the operation of our company. How do you start embark on that relationship? And what does that look like? And how do you trust that person? How do you know who's the right person? And what did your co-founder bring to the table?
Well, I think you're right. We talk about the attributes of a great culture. Trust is one of them. The other three, because people are going to wonder what those are, is a mission to believe in, a vision that's shared by all, and accountability. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, trust is that piece.
Right.
So the great leg up I had is that I had been working with my co-founder already. So we had this background and this relationship, and I fully trust him and he fully trusts me.
Right.
You know, the other night when you were speaking here at Tech Mountain, you talked about, you know, the intuition being so vitally important.
Yeah.
Along with, you know, and you mentioned, you know, probably more so than experience. And I would say that, you know, I would agree with you full, and I'm a big gut follower, big intuition follower. The experience piece, though, is where I think I had the leg up and how I was able to get into technology, because my co-founder had that experience, not only with technology, because he's former IBM, former Accenture before that, mm-hmm. Army Corps of Engineers before that. So he's just this brilliant man.
Yeah.
However, the experience with startups he also had. So he'd been an angel fund investment manager.
Mm-hmm.
So he's also watched everything under the sun come before and pitch to him. And he watched which startups worked and which ones failed.
Mm-hmm.
And so he knew what to do. So there was a lot of confidence I had going into this partnership.
Right.
Because he had had all this experience.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one thing. The control, the A-type that you're talking about, you and I discussed quickly or briefly the other night, too, personality profile, behavior analysis.
Yeah.
And that is something that we do a lot in our company, because when you're going to coach and develop an employee, you really need to understand their motivations, their why, their personality style, their preferred communication style.
Totally.
There's a ton of assessments out there. We happen to use a DISC personality. A lot of people will probably recognize this, DISC.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the C component is the compliance part,
mm-hmm.
you know, and a high C, someone you're going to want doing your programming, the quality control, very good attention to detail when it comes to those things, rule follower, procedural oriented. A low C, what box? There is no box.
Mm.
Well, my C barely registers, which makes sense for the entrepreneurial side. So I'm back to that whole lover of time management efficiency, like you talked about. I'm definitely that. I know when I'm not at my best, and it's going to take me 10 times as long to do something if I'm not skilled at that, right?
Yeah.
Than if I have someone else that is their highest and best use.
Mm-hmm.
So let me do and get the ROI on the activities that I know I can generate
100%.
And let my team do what they need to do to get the ROI that they can deliver much higher than I can. And it's going to be better than me, than I could ever do it myself.
Can you tap into the conversation about delegation?
Oh, yeah. I have no problem delegating.
But how is that? Because delegating is a complete loss of control.
Yeah, I guess I don't really think about a loss of control. I think of it as the empowerment piece. You know, well, one, I do a really good job hiring, and our team does a really good job hiring. So if I hired you, I believe in you. And to me, it's not a release of control. It's just simply, you're doing the job I've asked you to do. You know, I trust you. And we expect personal accountability at Performance Culture. That's also a part of what we train other companies to do. So I don't even think about it when mm-hmm. I've delegated a task. And you know what? They end up doing a better job than I ever could have imagined.
Right.
They come up with ideas that I would have never thought of on my own.
Mm-hmm.
We ascribe to Patrick Lencioni's ideal team player, which talks about the ideal team player is hungry, humble, and smart. And smart is EQ, emotional intelligence. We assume you have the acumen to do the job. We would not have hired you if you didn't have the acumen to do the job.
Mm-hmm.
But to be a part of our team, to be the ideal team player, you got to be hungry, got to have that drive, you got to be humble mm-hmm. and have those right motivations, and you got to have some emotional intelligence to work great with the team and with your customers.
Right.
So we put everybody through that gamut, that test, and so it works. It's just, I guess it's just not hard for me because I trust my people.
I love that. I think it comes up a lot. A lot of conversations, people telling me telling other people, got to delegate more. I mean, don't you hear that? Even in the people that you work with, you're probably thinking, you guys need to delegate a little bit more. It comes up so often that we, as founders, take on too much. And I think it's important for everybody to hear your perspective on it, because then be like, oh, wait, that's a smart move. And I love that you use the word, it's empowering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I know where maybe I can bring this together for you.
Yeah.
I have a 6 and a 7-year-old, and I run a startup company, and I'm married. They were both premature, so there was some, you know, some work we had to do there in this first couple of years. Yeah. The second one, wouldn't trade her for the world. It was not planned. You know, they're 15 months apart. Okay.
Wow.
That is hard.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, going back, I think that's where I learned to be a time management ninja, because when you have screaming infants and you're trying to keep, you know, and you can't even, you're just happy to have gotten a shower by 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Totally.
You know, that's where you, I think, learn to let go of control. So honestly, work is cake. Running, you know, and keeping two infants alive that are screaming their heads off, and you're trying to honestly nurse, and you're trying to do all these other things, like that's hard work. So, you know, I think that whole, the delegation thing, like that I had to survive saying no. When you said, you know, a lot of people ask me to do a lot of things in town and, you know, being a woman co-founder, that's got some sexiness to it. Right.
Yeah.
So that does attract. So I have to say no to a lot of things, because at the end of the day, to put food on my table, I've got to work. So my work must have its time. And my family must have its time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it was Andy Stanley that said that never trade the job that anybody can do for the job that only you can do. And I'm the job. I am the mom and the only mom my kids have. I'm the only wife that my husband has.
Yeah.
Frankly, other people could run performance culture. I hope not as good as me, maybe. But still, I mean, and one day they will.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's what's crazy about it. One day they will.
Yeah.
But I'm the only mom my kids have and
totally.
I'm the only wife my husband has.
Totally.
So that job has to come first.
The whole journey in being an entrepreneur is really exciting. With you, it was your kids that really, you know, inspired you to be as efficient as you could possibly be. And I understand with me, the drive that made me want to delegate even more was when I got really sick and I was like, it wasn't an option. And then it just kind of like, it was this amazing, beautiful opportunity to open my mind of like, where am I not being efficient enough? You know, where are the right pieces not in place because I'm doing too much myself? Mm-hmm. And so, so you build this tech, this tech company, this productivity, tool, right? Or efficiency tool.
Performance management is really the space
we're
in.
Okay.
You want to get the results out of your company.
Tech.
It is technically HR tech.
Okay.
That is the, you know, the genre you would put us in.
Yeah.
The part of HR, but see, HR tech is also payroll. HR tech is applicant tracking, everything to do with the when you find the people all the way to when you offboard the person.
Yeah.
So we would be in the middle of that chain, right? When you have them hired and now you got to make them really efficient and you got to make sure you're focusing on the right, you know, not only the what you do, but the how you do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, how... People don't like the idea of being measured, but you have to know, but people all want to know how they're doing and where they are in this spectrum and what can they do to improve because they want to reach their personal vision.
Right.
So we are in that space and it's called performance management.
So cool. And where are you guys at today? Like what's the current, I know we talked about this a bit at the start of our conversation, but let's revisit it. Like what's going on today? Where do you want to be tomorrow?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Love talking about this side of things. So we did spin off January 2015. The cool thing, a little bit different than a typical startup. I think I mentioned very lean. We have not taken any VC money. This is actually just a friends and family seed capital. We've actually been cash flowing our growth for about 3 years now, which is really cool because then we get to grow at a sustainable rate and what we believe is right for the company and for our team without really 100%. Burning them out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely times where I'm like, man, if I just had, you know, a certain amount of capital, I could hire this many salespeople.
Right.
We might be able to be there now. But you know, where is there? And, I love what we get to do. So I know we're doing the right thing. So January 2015, we were at least past proof of concept because we were able to, you know, have this beta group of clients with our business advisory, clients that we got to test on them. They were so kind to let us come in with an ugly, halfway working app, right? You know, and I'm just, you know, look back on it. I'm like, it makes me cringe thinking about that first generation application. But honestly, it put the food on our tables during that time. So I'm grateful for it. But we came in, we were able to get past proof of concept and get to a point that was, you know, past minimal viable standards. And then, you know, took it out to the market, and it was just like, okay, let's put up a website right. and let's go to some trade shows yeah. and let's see what happens.
Yeah.
So from there to where we are today, so that was January 2015, yeah. and we have 115 clients, I believe it is, that's businesses yeah. across the U.S., yeah. some in Canada. We have an Australian partnership. We have Australian clients right. and New Zealand.
Amazing.
Yeah. So our complete conjecture that what we were doing in southeastern North Carolina could probably span everywhere because people are humans and mm-hmm. people are people everywhere. It was proven right and mm-hmm. it's catching on. And so the pipeline that we have and the people that we're going to be closing over the next 6 months is so much bigger than we've had up to this point. So we're on that exponential S curve right now. So where do I see us going, you know, in a year from
now? How many people
are
on your team?
You know, in the US, we have about 15. We have some people that are remote.
Yeah.
And internally here in Wilmington, there's only about six mm-hmm. of us. You know, that's the headquarters. Mm-hmm. So super small, but very scalable process. Mm-hmm. And that goes to that lean startup right. mentality. A lot of our clients can't believe we are competing with these big boys with being so small. But that's the beauty of technology in a yeah. cloud-based system.
Can you walk us through real quick, kind of like as visually as possible, because obviously this is an audio podcast. What is it to be a customer? Like who is your customer?
Yeah.
And then what do they experience when they sign up? What does signing up mean? How do they utilize your tool or where does that tool go into play? And what else do they experience through their customer journey?
Oh, that's a great question. We have found that the pain point tends to happen when people start to reach out to us is about that 40 to 50 employee mark. Okay. Because, there's a lot of HR laws around that 50 employee mark anyway. So at that point, you're kind of rocking and rolling with your company and you're like, oh gosh, we got to have something to like manage performance and figure out where everybody is and kind of know who we you know, who should we coach up or coach out or what do we got to do with these people? We know we got to do something. We don't know what we got to do. Mm-hmm. So we start getting calls around that age or not age, but age of a life cycle. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that we start getting calls around then. And then, you know, our space is going to be up until about that 1,500, 2,000 employee space. When you start getting, and there are certainly some companies that are right now evaluating us that are in the 6,000-7,000 employee range.
Right.
They're going to have a lot more integration requests, mm-hmm. which we are building an open API key system, so we can certainly do that. But for up to date, it's been primarily companies that wanted a standalone performance management system that were trying to, frankly, get those results. They weren't really worried about tying into payroll and those kinds of
right.
things. So that's kind of where people come to us about. So the average employee size is constantly trending up. You know, anywhere from 150 to 450 employee range is probably the most interest that we get right now. So still small size companies.
Right.
All right. So that's that. When they sign up online and they get a coach. Here's what's really cool. They get a certified coach that they talk to. It is right. a human being that has some sense about them, that they're not just selling software, that have, again, been in the field, been in the trenches
right.
with managers and employees and coach them. And they have a launch coaching session with these administrators, these super users to say, hey, what are your goals?
Yeah.
Tell me what your current culture is like.
Right.
And what do you want it to be?
Right, right.
And we're going to give you some best practices. And so much of our system is not just how you click a button. Frankly, everybody today, mm-hmm. or most people today, are computer literate.
Right.
The training videos that come along with the system, that's easy.
Right.
But how do you have that conversation and what kind of process workflows do you want to have? That's that thought leadership that they are not going to get from just anybody.
Right, right.
They're going to get that from us.
Right.
So they're going to really get someone that handholds them through their implementation and launch process. And then they can even bring us on site. So about half of our clients will fly a certified performance culture coach on site to help do additional leadership and development workshops.
I love it. I love it. And what's next steps for you?
Gosh, I mean, that's a great question. You know, Simon Sinek also talks about, you know, we talk about vision a lot and finding your own vision. And then he said something not too long ago. Honestly, I wish I remember when this TED Talk happened. But he said, sometimes you find somebody else's vision and then you take and run with it more than they ever dreamed.
Wow.
Yeah. And when I heard that, I lit up because it was like, that's me. I found my partner had the original vision of what this company could be and the yeah. valuation it can be and the impact we could have. but he needed somebody to take it and run it and actually make it happen.
Yeah.
I found that vision. I saw what it could be, and I've taken it and run with it and made it bigger than he ever thought.
Yeah.
You know, and I know that's what we're going to be like. Honestly, I can say right now, I know we are going to be up there and we're going to be known in that space. And again, it's still going to be those radical buyers, those right. people that are willing to be transparent and have right. trust and accountability. So not everybody, not every organization is like that.
Yeah.
But amongst those companies that value those things, I believe we're going to be the number one, you know, performance management provider in that space.
Amazing. And before we wrap up our conversation, I really want to kind of like jump back to being a mom, a wife, an entrepreneur. Any suggestions?
Have a wonderful partner that and people in your life, a support system. You cannot do this life alone. And, you know, I wave the white flag on a daily basis. And you also mentioned when someone asked you about mentorship the other day, you said, hey, have guardrails, have set those rules at the very beginning. 100% yes. That's what I was kind of alluding to earlier. I hate having to say no. Well, I say I certainly don't hate it as much as I used to, because I know that by saying no, I'm also saying yes to the most important things in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
I love that. Can you say it one more time? It's just, it's really powerful.
Oh, thank you. That made me feel so good. It's special. Said by saying no, I'm also saying yes to the most important things in my life.
I mean, you guys take a moment. I don't think I've ever heard that before.
I don't know if I've heard it or it just came out. I'm not sure. I'll take some credit for it.
Like I think we all need to hear that. I know I need to hear that. It's really powerful. Because even when I was like, I got to say no, because I just need to say no, because it's mm-hmm. important, because of whatever, blah, 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 chatter, chatter, right? Mm-hmm. But the way you made it as saying no is saying yes, which
it is.
Is like... Great.
It's 100% yes.
That was
and,
a great
and,
one.
And if I don't, then the most important relationships in my life are the ones that suffer.
Yeah.
So, you know, at the end of your life, who's going to be at your bedside?
Yeah.
It's not, I mean, I love my customers, but it's not going to be them. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's
going to
be my family.
Yeah. I have to say there's something about you. So I have a mentor figure in my life. Her name's Deborah, and she's in Los Angeles. And when I met her, I felt that like she was just embodied powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, how do you do that? You're just like powerful, but yes, accessible. And then she handed me her business card and on it, it said powerful. I was like, oh my gosh, you're so in alignment with your energy. But I feel like that about you. I feel like you're this powerful, strong woman. And I think in being an entrepreneur, to figure out how to be, how and when and what is feminine and mm-hmm. what and how and when is powerful and, you know, all of the things. And to kind of like somehow beautifully mesh them together and just be all of the things in tandem in a really harmonious way at all times. At least for me, that's the goal. Like, how can I be all those things at once, but, and just like own that and still be approachable and accessible and warm and, you know, all those.
Right.
Yeah. And so it's really nice meeting you and talking to you and having this conversation, because I really think that like the path that you've created for yourself, like really embodies that sense of power. I think that's the true power is being comfortable, being feminine, being powerful, being a caretaker and being a receiver, like all of it at one time. Yeah.
I'll tell you, it might have something to do with early on. I was such a tomboy. I was my dad's, I think I was the son my dad always wanted thing, you know?
Yeah.
But I have a black belt in karate too. So I love, and Wonder Woman, like my hashtags on Facebook is like, I am Wonder Woman, like I embody that whole concept. So, you know, I do love that whole strong feminine side. I think, and I hope that more women can get comfortable in that skin.
Yeah.
And a funny story, one of my staff the other day, I came in and talked about, we had this trade show, it was like 4 days on the road, and a bunch of different, you know, change of clothes situations.
Yeah.
And I actually got it all into a carry-on bag and my laptop bag.
Yeah.
So I didn't have to worry about baggage check of that. And let's just say someone else checked a bag.
Yeah.
It may have been a male.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I'm so proud of myself. I didn't have to check a bag. It was the first time. And she goes, well, you know, Melissa, she goes, you are a girl. She said, but you can be a dude if you need to be.
I love that.
So, I think that goes to what you're talking about. I think, and I'm not being a dude, but sometimes to compete in a man's world, you got to be able to adapt sometimes and play their game a little bit. But then we get a leg up because of all of the intuition that we have.
Oh my God. Thank you so much
for
spending time with the Women in Tech podcast. You've been awesome. I've really enjoyed this conversation. I think it's helped a lot of people.
Oh, good.
And yeah, this is great. You guys, if you want to connect with Melissa, where can everybody connect with you?
Well, I mean, I guess through the website, performanceculture.com. And
what a great name.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's cool because everybody's referring to it as a noun right now.
Yeah.
You know, creating a culture of performance, a performance culture. I'm on LinkedIn. We're our Facebook page, Performance Culture. Twitter is at Perf Culture P. E-R-F-C-U-L-T-R, which is crazy because somebody else had anyway.
And can you spell your name for everybody in case they look you up on LinkedIn?
Sorry, that would be helpful. Melissa, M-E-L-I-S-S-A. Philippi is P-H-I-L-L-I-P-P-I, kind of like Mississippi.
Awesome. And if you guys want to connect with more incredible women in tech, you can go to the Women in Tech Facebook group. You just go there directly by going to womenintechvip.com. That's womenintechvip.com. I will talk to you guys, see you guys, hear you guys in the next episode. Bye.
Awesome. Thank you, Esprit.
Betalist, one of my favorite companies to gain exposure to your startup before you're even live. Go to betalist.com/womenintech and get featured. Yes, get your startup featured while still in beta and make sure people know that you're about to go live. So when you open the floodgates for business, you'll be ready with pre-existing customers and signups. That's betalist.com/womenintech. The Women in Tech podcast is an independent production funded by you, the community. To support Women in Tech, if you believe in the vision as much as we do, please consider going to womenintechpodcast.com. That's womenintechpodcast.com, and just click on the contribution link to keep this podcast going. Thank you.